This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. As we do Thursday, every Thursday at 9 o'clock hour, MGo Blog Roundtable crew joins us for the MGo Blog Roundtable. Starting off first with Mr. Brian Cook, Mr. MGo Blog himself. Brian, good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. I'm doing great. Of course, Seth Fisher. Seth, how are you this morning?
Sam, if you had hair, I'm sure it would look just as slept in as the rest of ours right now.
And what, Mr. Craig Ross? Craig, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. I'm thinking of changing my name to Krabby Hoff.
All right, man. Well, so let's start there. This is our first time to chat, our first time to talk since, Sunday's post-game theatrics, right? Just to get your quick take on that, on the punishment that came thereafter. And then, of course, we can get about the business of the response from Michigan against Rutgers. But just your thoughts on Sunday, Brian, and the punishments that followed.
I think it's faintly ridiculous that Michigan's the only team that copped a suspension for that. Obviously, Juwan went too far, shouldn't have done that. But fundamentally, I'm in favor of, like, spiciness, so, like, the next time Michigan plays Wisconsin, it's going to be an event, and so, like, yeah, don't do it again. Let's move on. Worst things happen in every period in a hockey game.
Seth?
Yeah, I was calling it a slappy fish, because I couldn't figure out exactly what to call it. It was like a downward motion hit, kind of head-to-side thing, where he also kind of rubs the head. But obviously, I thought Juwan was wrong. I thought that he was the most wrong. So him getting suspended 5 games seemed about right. And I agree with Brian that, you know, I'm surprised the Big Ten didn't look at some of the things that the assistant coaches of Wisconsin did, both in instigating and then afterwards. They had one assistant coach tackle Terrence Williams, and there were fans sitting right behind that. It's like, it's hard to see it on the video, but then, you know, there are a lot of fans who've been there afterwards who've been saying, "Yeah, I was right there and watch this guy tackle Terrence Williams into the floor." I'm also kind of, you know, you don't normally interact with a lot of Wisconsin fans, and some of them who've been jumping into my mentions are, it's just the whole program seems to think that this is 100% nothing to do with them. And I'm like, no, you guys were involved in this. Juwan was absolutely wrong. And I think Michigan fans kind of have to stop right there. But everyone else is pretty, watching Wisconsin being like, are you guys going to take any responsibility for this at all?
They took absolutely none whatsoever. Before I get to Craig, man, the Terrence Williams one, I mean, he got tackled, he got punched. If anyone was, you know, within his rights to defend himself, could legitimately say they were defending themselves, it was Terrence Williams. But hey, I digress. It's as fired up as I've ever seen Craig Ross be after Phil's press conference. What was that, Tuesday?
Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, that's as fired up as I've ever seen you be, Craig.
Well, yeah, I have some ambivalence in that on the one hand, yeah, Juwan deserves his suspension. On the other hand, I think he should have hit the dude harder. I mean, I think he should have gotten his money's worth. That was barely a tap, I mean, on the back of the dude's head. And if you recall, that guy, Krabbehoff, was pre-Brad Davison, the dirtiest player in the Big Ten. And he cold cocked a guy at Purdue named, I'm blocking on his name. He was a guard at Purdue. He just about knocked him cold with a dirty elbow in a Purdue game. And that was sort of what he did because he couldn't play basketball, but he could throw his elbows around. And so for Krabbehoff, who was now I agree, Juwan had no reason to be mad except at his own team. All this stuff about timeouts and, you know, it was all nonsense. Juwan was just mad because his team shot whatever it was 4-25 from three, and that's what really cost them the game. And Juwan was wrong not to shake guard's hand, but once Juwan was doing the walk by on guard. And it was clear guard knew Juwan was upset. Guard just should have let it go. Even Cow, I have a quote from Cowherd. He said, this was pre-suspension. He said, Greg Gard and Juwan Howard should both be suspended. Both failed as adults, period. And he said, Greg Gard had no reason to grab Juwan Howard and he should be suspended. Now, I don't know if Gard should really be suspended. That was Cowherd's take. And certainly perhaps guard was less culpable than Juwan. But after that, this is pretty much Wisconsin. You've got Terrence Williams and Fold sort of protecting Juwan, standing in front of him. Terrence is being a peacekeeper. And here comes Krabbehoff yelling and screaming, pushing Folds aside, tries to push through Terrence, can't do it, screaming at Juwan over something. I'd like to know what he was saying. And so Juwan gives him this, I would call it a cuff on the back of the head. And as Brian says,
slappy fish. No, it's called a slappy fish.
Yeah. It was nothing. And then Terrence Williams gets attacked by an assistant coach who gets nothing. You have a coach attacking a player and that gets nothing. And then he gets punched in the face by number zero. Terrence is supposed to just do nothing when a coach tackles him and another guy hits him in the face? What the hell is this all about? Terrence should not have been suspended. That coach should be suspended for a long time. Krabbehoff should be suspended. Yes, Musa should have been suspended because if you swing at somebody, you should hit something other than a towel. Which is what Musa managed to hit. And so to me, yes. Was Juwan wrong? Yes. Does he deserve his punishment? Yes. But for Wisconsin and the Wisconsin athletic director to be oblivious to their own role is pathetic. And
well, that's Wisconsin, though, man. Like,
I'm going to root against them, and I've never been a Wisconsin hater, but man, from now on they could be playing Michigan State. I'm rooting for Michigan State. Like, I became a Sparty fan.
You know, how long have they defended Brad Davison? Yeah. And how much more indefensible has Brad Davison's actions been over the course
of
his
career?
Well,
he tripped a guy in this game. It was a very dangerous play.
And he was trying to cup check Hunter Dickinson, but Hunter Dickinson got him in the stomach. So it's like, that's just who he is. And there's no peep from anybody from Wisconsin. Not like if you're a Wisconsin fan and you're trying to play up the fact that Juwan Howard's a bad dude, I'm not listening to you unless you have, I'm embarrassed that Brad Davison represents my university somewhere on your Twitter feed. Yeah. Right?
I mean, the dude tells you everything you need to know about Brad Davison. After the fracas is brought out of control, he's trying to lead the team, you know, over to sing the song.
Sing Varsity, yeah, which is the song that they stole from us when George Little went from Michigan to Wisconsin. They didn't have a song, by the way. But he's suddenly like possessed by this deep desire to go sing Varsity while Michigan is standing right where they need to be.
And, right.
Like, people are like defending that. I'm like, no, dude, that's Brad Davison. Whoa. Let's make a list of people we're giving the benefit of the doubt to in all of basketball.
So anyway. Water under the bridge, so to speak. Juwan suspended for 5 games, 4 more left. Musa and Terrence out last night against the Rutgers team, fellas, that had been trending up. They had won before they lost to Purdue. They on the road, mind you. They had won 4 straight. And it was and all the teams were ranked when they beat them. It was Michigan State. At Wisconsin was in there. I know they beat Illinois and Ohio State. So, I mean, this was a squad that, for according to most, had punched their tournament ticket. And they beat Michigan earlier this season. And Michigan in this game, Brian, basically, I think past 2-0, Michigan never trailed again.
No, they didn't. And, you know, it's pretty hard not to just simplify everything to shooting, right? Like, Geo Baker went off against Michigan in the first game. He's 2-7 from 2 in this game. He's 0-4 from 3. Rutgers shoots 2-12 from 3. Michigan shoots 7-22, which isn't great. It's 32%, but that's like the first game in the last 3 months that Michigan hasn't shot either 50% or 15%. So just hitting sort of the broad sort of average middle on your three-point shooting turns Michigan into a pretty decent team. And then we are well aware that Michigan is undersized, doesn't really have a wing defender. So if you have pull-up game, you're probably going to do some work, and Ron Harper did, but nobody could hit a three for Rutgers, and that was about it.
Yeah. It helps that Caleb Houston saw his first bucket go in there, Craig. But yeah. I said, like I said to Phil, and I don't know if you heard the interview.
I did.
I felt like the way he started that game, it wasn't just that he saw the ball go through the hoop his first shot. It was, he came out, he got that block on the defensive end. Then on the offensive end, he gets he's attacking the rim, gets a Euro step and finish. He had a pass on a side pick and roll. It was like all parts of his game were really engaged, and the shooting seemed to follow along with. Now, maybe it's as simple as saying he's better shooting at home than on the road. I acknowledge that that could be the case, but it certainly felt like the most engaged in all the other aspects of his game that we've seen him be. And I'd be surprised if that didn't contribute to his offensive success in this game.
A couple things. One is, when Brian has mentioned this sort of on-off switch on Michigan's three-point shooting. So I went back and checked. And in the games Michigan has won this year, they've shot 41.1% from three, which is pretty good. And in the games they've lost, 21%. I mean, so that spread is remarkable. But then I thought, well, maybe it's not remarkable. So I went back and looked at Indiana, which seems to, you know, in the same general ballpark of the standings, and shoots at a three-point clip similar to what Michigan does. And they are 35% in wins and 28% in losses. That's probably an ordinary split, is my guess, at least. So the Michigan dichotomy of 40 and 20 is really quite remarkable. I don't know what to make of it. In terms of Caleb, I mentioned, as you may recall, last summer that I saw him play in the FIBA games for the Canadian team. And while I thought he was the best player on the Canadian team and did some things very well, he shot the ball very poorly from three. And that was concerning to me. I've been somewhat skeptical of him, but I think I'm seeing his game beginning to really come around. Yes, last night was his best game by far. I think he's working harder on defense. And the big thing I'm seeing on his shot is, earlier in the season, he was rushing everything. It was like the ball was hot, and he had to get it out of his hands. Last night, he was more in rhythm. He was a little more patient. And I think I've seen some of that, as the season has gone along. So, he did rebound the ball very well in the game they lost against Wisconsin. I think they had 10. He had 10 rebounds in the Wisconsin game. So a lot of his game is beginning to pick up. And last night, I think you really saw it. And with when he makes his first shot, he seems like a different player. He makes that first shot, and all of a sudden you sort of breathe a sigh of relief and say, okay, this may be a good one for him.
So I thought, Brian's right. They obviously didn't shoot it well from three as a team, but they did shoot it well from the mid range. And I'm thinking of Eli and Devontae Jones in particular. I don't know what their combined 3-point percentage was, but it wasn't very good. But man, both of those guys had it going from mid range perspective last night. And granted, that part of the defense was giving them that shot, but they made them pay for doing it.
Yeah, I that was a pretty simple, it felt like a 70s game at one point because, you know, Rutgers was taking away the rim and they were taking away the three-point line at first. And what did they give Michigan? They just gave them all those jumpers. So first they were going to, you know, elbows from Hunter Dickinson. And then I love the one where Eli just, he goes under the basket, draws the entire team, comes out, and then he's like, you know, mid-court and there's nobody there. It's just like, okay, I guess I'll shoot it from here. And then I guess you were on the phone this morning and that was planned. Like that was something that the coaches saw that was going to be a hole in the Rutgers defense and said, this is what we got to attack. And so they practiced it because normally mid-range jumpers, even if they're open, you know, they go in 44% of the time or whatever, and that's not a great shot. But this becomes a you know, if you're practicing it, I guess, that's a way you can up that shot. And that's been kind of like that soft spot you can find against teams that are just overcommitting to the numbers.
Yeah, and this is it's significant to me that against that team, a team that has been playing well, a team that is going to check you, they're going to guard you, that this team found some things last night. Now, here's the million-dollar question, Brian, and I don't expect you to know, but can they repeat it? So far, the answer has been no. They can't string together, string back-to-back coherent offensive efforts together. I guess the one thing that would lend itself to that maybe being the case this time is they played decent against Illinois last time without Hunter, and this is a home game. So these are back-to-back home games. Maybe that will contribute to them finding some offensive success in this one on Sunday.
Well, I mean, again, it's really hard not to go back to the shooting. Like, I thought Michigan's offensive performance in the Wisconsin game was really good, at least in terms of the quality of shots they got up, mm-hmm. but they shot 16% from three. So you can't win games like that. And, I mean, I was doing the preview for this game, and I looked up some stats on synergy. And Michigan is 90th percentile at contested jumpers, and they're 26th percentile at uncontested jumpers. So this is just a team that is not successfully executing on a lot of good looks. And there's, you know, it kind of boggles the mind. I mean, this is not a team that is heavy on shooting. It's true. They usually start two non-shooters, depending on how you consider Devontae Jones. And who's really struggling, and you know, that's Michigan needs one or two more shooters off the bench, and they just don't really have it. And it's, I don't want to be so reductive where I'm like, this is the whole problem, but that's the whole problem.
When I say they played decent against Illinois, look, relatively speaking, they didn't shoot the ball well, but it was a close game until the final 4 minutes of the contest.
Yeah, didn't they have like a lead very briefly deep into that game?
Yeah, so
I think they were ahead by a point or two at the 10-minute mark, and it was still close at around 4 minutes.
They were down one with seven minutes left, and then
they just fell apart, which is pretty remarkable considering they didn't have Hunter, that they were using Jace and Jaren Foltz to check Kofi. I mean, so Michigan played actually a remarkably good game, except they didn't shoot it.
So I'm curious, what are you seeing how this team responded last night without Juwan, without Musa, without Terrence, looking at this slate of games, and Phil brought it up. They're trying to find some rhyme or reason to what's going on too. I mean, he seems perplexed that we talked about, like, why can't they put up more shots than any Michigan team I've been around. I know he's only been here a few years, but he said, hey, they put in the work. They don't seem reluctant to shoot in games, and some games they fall, some games they don't. But he said this morning, we shoot better at home. The next three games are at home. That being the case, understanding all the poor shooting dynamics that have been in play up to this point, I'm curious, Seth, do you have any greater optimism based on this slate being at home that they're going to be able to pull out a couple of more of these down the stretch?
I mean, I'd rather play Michigan State at home than Breslin. That's kind of seems to be an important distinction. Michigan's also, and Michigan's above Michigan State in net now. So the rankings are actually kind of looking at Michigan going, their season's been better than State's in a lot of ways. I wanted to go back to something that Craig mentioned. It goes back to the shooting too. That Caleb Houston, just a few nights ago, I looked at his numbers. He was 46% on three-point shooting in wins, 17% in losses. So, I mean, it's not just the team, how they shoot. It's just Caleb. And it's plausible that this guy, freshman, you know, he played for a pretty big school, but he was not the focus of it. When, you know, other fans are yelling at him, maybe just gets in his head. He's got a little bit of a kind of a side shot that goes near his ear. And, you know, maybe it just comes down to that. And, like, the support that he gets at Chrysler and, like, the way that people cheer about him. And, like, you know, maybe that it really is just all it is Houston shooting. But yeah, I mean, these are definitely winnable games. Illinois is tough, but I think Curbelo is not the danger we thought he was before. So they are, you know, who they are. Michigan can beat that team. Michigan could also lose that team by 20 if, you know, Kofi is dominating. He's
Illinois
big.
Is kind of scuffling right now. They, like, their last four games, they got annihilated by Purdue. They squeezed by Northwestern when Northwestern didn't shoot any threes. They lost to this Rutgers team by 11. And then they beat Michigan State at Michigan State, but Michigan State is in a total free fall right now. So, you know, they're definitely beatable, especially at home, especially when you have Hunter Dickinson back. You know, I think it's definitely something that Michigan can achieve.
Yeah, far be it for me to you know, I'm not sitting like Michigan is the you know, riding high right now. Michigan has certainly been inconsistent, but it's full scale, to your point, Brian, full scale swoon for Michigan State. And I wonder what you guys make of that. I mean, this was a team that some were talking up as a team that could maybe make a run in the postseason, and they've fallen on really hard times. And I'm curious what you guys see when you look at that squad as potential reasons why.
Well, they were kind of surfing on some pretty unsustainable shooting for a long time. And honestly, it kind of looks like they still are. Like, they had two guys shooting more than 50% from three. And, you know, they're 12th of the nation in 3-point percentage, and they've lost five of their last six games. Like, you know, I think Marcus Bingham kind of has a Brandon Johns thing going on, because he's should be better than he was. He was awesome against Hunter Dickinson one-on-one when he played Michigan at Breslin, but, you know, for whatever reason, he just keeps getting pulled out of games and can't stay on the floor because his coach is in his head so much. But, you know, they're without Bingham playing well, they just don't have anybody who can defend the post.
Yeah, it's a strange team, because I look at them and I think they should be doing a lot better than they are, because they do have a bunch of guys who really can shoot the ball. I mean, they got a whole team of shooters. On the other hand, they're the world champions at turning the ball over, and they don't create any turnovers. And so I don't know what's going on there. Is it just a crappy coaching job by Tom Izzo? Maybe. Is it something else? But it feels like a team that should be achieving at a much higher level than they are. Maybe it's point guard play. Right. But on the other hand, Hogard has not been that bad. I mean, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, Izzo, he was saying before the season that this would be a good year for Hogard. Talking him up as much as what's the transfer kid's name?
Walker.
Walker. Walker. Yeah.
I was a little bit skeptical, but he's been proven right about that. I do question his belief that he's getting teed up because of Juwan.
Goodness.
What?
Yeah. He claimed Izzo claims that because of the, I mean, it wasn't a direct reference to Juwan, but it was certainly an indirect reference. But that because of the fight or at the Michigan Wisconsin game, that the refs are eyeing him more skeptically than usual.
Oh my God!
I mean, the guy is a narcissist.
If I had ever officiated a mission, like, I can't believe that he stays in games. Yeah. Like, that's, I mean,
I know it's one of the craziest, the most... even among Izzo takes. That's like right at the top.
Oh man, I'm so glad you didn't hear that ahead of time, because we got a chance to hear how incredulous.
Has anyone ever shown Tom Izzo a picture of Tom Izzo talking to an official?
Right.
Hal talking to his players with his teeth bared like a wild animal and his fist clenched.
Or how he sets screens on every time his team comes down the floor, right? It was, again, vintage classic Tom Izzo. But you know, everything that we just said, and you know they'll play better against Michigan. That's just how it goes.
Well, they've played well against us, and they'll probably continue to play well. We just have to play a little better. I have a question for you guys. What did you think of Kobe and Frankie's play? Now, Frankie has been, like a guy driving on the Autobahn, but it's really like a school district. It's like he knows one speed, 200 miles an hour. I think the big thing for Frankie is it isn't, you often hear about the game needing to slow down. No, he needs to slow down. Although he did make an incredible play last night with a Euro step and just an incredible layup in traffic. And so, but the big thing to me last night was Kobe actually ended up with more minutes than Brandon Johns. And Kobe seemed.
He was a more confident player.
Yeah, he seemed he didn't shoot it great, but he seemed just a little more comfortable on the court last night, which I think is, and I think the same can be said for Frank. Frankie's an unbelievable athlete. I mean, you're not going to find a better athlete than Frankie Collins. The question is whether he can sort of harness it all and put it all together in something that resembles basketball.
Yeah, I'm curious, Seth. I mean, Brandon Johns just strikes me as a player that is playing with zero confidence on the offensive end of the floor.
Yeah.
Fortunately, he's doing other things. He had a nice pass.
Nice block last night.
Nice block. But just shooting the basketball, you talk about a guy being in his own head. Kofi, though, his second half, Kofi and Frankie, they joined in that freshman party with Caleb Houston. And, both of those guys gave him a jolt. And that's the Kobe. Watching Kobe shoot that three in transition, I was like, yeah, that's Kobe. And Phil said he didn't like the shot till it went in. I like that he felt confident enough to jack that one. I like the aggression under the rim. And I think that flows back to even with him on the defensive end of the floor. Yeah, he got beat a couple of times, but I thought he was more connected defensively in this game than I've seen him beat this.
Yeah, he was getting torched earlier in the season against Sam Sessoms. And then, he's checking Geo Baker on a couple of things and forces Baker into tough contested pull-ups. So that's a lot of progress from him. And he had a good game against Iowa as well, chipped in 10 points. And, one of the things that this team needs is they need someone other than Brooks, Dickinson, and Devontae Jones to produce somewhat consistently. And we got it from Bufkin against Iowa. We got it from Caleb Houston against Rutgers. And if they can just get a fourth guy to contribute, get some buckets, then things look a lot better.
No doubt. All right. Getting a break sign from Mr. Weintraub. So we'll take this break. We'll come back on the other side. We'll talk. Spring football is underway. You got Denard Robinson coming back to town. The hockey team. The beat just keeps going on. Is Luke, how about this question? Who brought this up? Was it Spath? Was it Spath who said, hey, is Luke Hughes? Is he? Can you make a case for him to be the best guy on the team?
I think you can.
All right, so we'll get to all of that.
On the Martelli interview today, he said something that made me feel quite sad. And he said, talking about that his family, he said not having any family around.
Yeah, Phil lives here. His family is in Philly.
Yeah, and that, I thought, oh, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, he has
So his wife doesn't live here?
No, his wife does not live here.
Wow.
Whose wife doesn't live here?
Phil.
Martelli. Yeah. So I don't know. That it just made me feel sad when he said that. And
it's good. That's why, not that you want games to be canceled due to COVID, but that if there was a silver lining to it, is that Phil got a chance to go home and see his family. Over the holiday break. So, man, he's,
So is he sort of a short termer? Could he go back to Philly next year? Is he looking for a head coaching job again?
I honestly don't know. It doesn't seem like he's actively on the hunt, but after being a head coach for so long, I can't imagine he would say no if someone came to. What I can't tell you is he chasing it? I don't know if he's chasing it. Saadi and Howard Eisley, those guys are looking for opportunities, the right opportunity. We know Saadi turned down Western Michigan.
It's sort of a surprise because he's a Western grad, right? And he just felt that wasn't a good opportunity.
He's top. He's going to get a good job.
He was up for the Penn State job when Micah got it. So it's got to be, if you're him, why go be a head coach at a mid-major making the same or close to the same money as you make as an assistant at Michigan, right? Or just wait for a Power Five opportunity, even if it's like a Penn State. I mean, but at least you're at a Power Five institution.
Back on radio in about 30.
You probably got at least double your salary. And same thing for Howard. I think those guys are being a little more discerning than just taking the first thing that comes their way. So I imagine Phil is the same because I don't think he wants to be just listening to him talk. I don't think he wants to be a head coach again so bad that he would take the first thing that comes his way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's interesting. He's not a young guy, so people may have some reticence.
Spring ball underway. There's so much going on. Y'all, a lot of people just lost sight of, the process of getting ready for the next season is underway. Mentor getting broken in is the DC. You got some coaching swaps, maybe some experiments as far as guys playing different positions are concerned. I think the most noteworthy news football related over the past week is word that Denard is coming back. I first heard about this a few weeks ago when we heard about A'shaun getting ready to leave. So A'shaun going down to Ole Miss, and A'shaun said they're going to be bringing Denard in probably in some personnel or recruiting role. I think that's a positive move, man. You got some, I'm thinking of immediately, and I got to talk to the folks in the city about this. But man, this is Devin's man. This is Devin's guy. Now being on the staff, maybe being overly optimistic, fellas, but I gotta believe this helps with Dante Moore.
Well, I mean, my only question about bringing Denard Robinson back is, why did it take so long? This man is sunshine and light, and everybody in his presence will benefit from it. So, yes, it's long may he reign.
can I tell you something about Denard Robinson that I get from, because we've interviewed, we've had had him on the podcast before. We've had a lot of the guys that he played with talk to us before, and the one thing that fans don't know about Denard Robinson is he's one of the hardest workers to ever come through Michigan. So, this is a guy who he's going to put in time, too. So, just having him, you think that, man, this guy is sunshine and he's awesome and everyone loves him and, what a great guy. But also, I mean, this dude works. And he was the one who kind of, wrapped everyone together when they lost Rich Rod and said, you guys want to lose or not? And, those are some legendary workouts that he was leading. So, I mean, Denard is not just the smiles and fun Denard that we know. Deep down, this guy is a real asset to a football program. I know he was in Jacksonville, too. So, I mean, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he'll be a positive presence in the building. We got a question in the chat. Why would you ask your best blocking receiver to move to DB? It's talking about Mikey Sainristal. This is one I heard about a couple of months ago, too, probably before Mikey. they're gonna be talking to him about playing DB. But look, man, necessity is the mother of invention, right? He was a two-way player in high school. They need corner help. I still expect them to be looking in the portal post spring when other guys jump in. A good thing that you got Will enrolling early. Good thing that that Will is physically ready to go, because even if he wasn't, they were going to need him to be. And I this is the other thing. They're loaded at receiver. And I'm telling you right now, I know that there are guys in that receiver room. You know, it was one that I'm thinking of in particular that was looking very closely at, like, man, what's the playing time going? What's the breakdown going to be? I might have to look around if things aren't looking a certain kind of way. So I say that not to strike fear, not to suggest that someone is going to be on their way out, but to highlight the fact that that's a loaded room. And if you got some space or a need at corner, and you got a receiver that can play there and really help, oh man, you do that, because it helps you with two problems. It helps you with the lack of depth at the DB spot, and it helps you with the excessive depth at the receiver position. I'm not worried about blocking, because anyone that doesn't block will not play for Ron Bellamy, period. You don't block, you don't play.
Really, yeah, that's absolutely right. And the I don't know if you guys saw any of his tape as a defensive back in high school. I did not. But I just have an instinct that if a guy's that good of a blocker, he can probably tackle. And it isn't that corners don't have to tackle. They got to tackle. And the other thing is, if it doesn't work out, doesn't mean you can't move him back into a place where you feel he has greater utility. I just have a hunch that this might be a good move for both Sandra Still and the team. I think it's possible. It's possibly a big deal win. You try it out.
Yeah, you try it out and you see it. You know, get this. D-Tuck says he won't play it down at DB. I hope that's the case.
Yeah,
I hope that's the case.
I mean, it's terrifying from a defensive back standpoint, because where were we last year? We're like, oh no, our cornerbacks, right? I was kind of taking it from Ronnie Bell's coming back. Where do you want Ronnie? Where's the best place to use Ronnie Bell? Is the slot. He's been very effective in the slot. He is still the best blocker on Michigan's team, not Mike Samer still among the receivers. It's Ronnie Bell. So let's not forget that guy is going to be the highlight of Michigan's offense this year as long as he's healthy. And that was at Samer still's spot. So it made sense to me from that perspective. Also getting some leadership. I mean, Samer still is he's a worker. He's one of the older players now. He's been around. And they've got a lot of freshmen coming in, a lot of freshmen who are going to imagine that they want to play. And you kind of need someone with that group showing them, this is what it takes. I really hope that he's not the starting cornerback this year, because there's I remember his tape. It was all right. It was, I think that a lot of schools were looking at him as a cornerback, and his upside was a lot higher at slot receiver, and I like him as a slot receiver. If he spends the year at cornerback and goes back to slot next year, I think that'd be fine. I think that cross-training players actually helps them become better players, and hopefully that's the plan here, just because they got so many excess receivers and Ronnie Bell plays his position.
Yeah, no doubt. Great thoughts. All right, so Craig Ross seemed to agree with the I think it was Spath that brought it up, or maybe it was you, Craig. Forgive me if I'm not, if I'm taking credit away from you. And talking about Luke Hughes, he said, hey, man, wait a minute. Can we make the case for someone other than Owen Power being the best player on the team?
Well, I hope Spath said it, because he probably knows more about hockey than I do. But, I think Luke Hughes is unbelievable at this point. Now, he still can be negligent on the defensive end at times. But his skating ability, his ability on the power play, his ability as a puck handler and passer and a shooter, I mean, he's got, I think, 16 goals right now, which is a remarkable number for a defenseman at this point, or at any point. I think there's a case to be made that, that he's right there as good as any other player at worst on this team. Michigan, without their four Olympians, I didn't think they'd win all four games. I mean, I thought maybe Michigan State, because Michigan State's like skating in cement overshoes. I really didn't expect them to play that well against Ohio State without those guys. But they did, and a good part of it, I felt, was Luke Hughes, although other guys stepped up. Obviously they got good goaltending and Johnny Beecher all of a sudden at this late date has become a really nice playmaker on his line. He still has trouble scoring, but you're seeing a lot of good things from Beecher.
Yeah, so Brian, I what was saving this question for you? Can you make the case question that the Olympians are having for Olympians, even though they're your best play, that Michigan's a better team as a result of them being away from it, because you grew your depth that much more in their absence. Can you make that case?
Yeah, you can make that case. They went 4-0 without them. They dominated most of those games. You know, Ohio State was a little bit more feisty, especially on the Friday night game. But yeah, I mean, you come back and now you're going to see Ethan Edwards on Michigan's third pair. And Ethan Edwards has been very good for the past 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that I think that they didn't really progress on is like the power play, but your whole power play was in Beijing. So that happens. I mean, and then you have Samuskevich kind of coming up as a guy who's performing better. You have Marcus Stoppa, although he needs to stop taking some penalties. You have Dylan Duke, who's actually done some good work in the past few weeks too. So yeah, now you have some decisions about who you're actually going to sit, and it's not clear who that's going to be. And you know, Michigan is fighting for the number one overall seed. They're fighting for a Big Ten championship. So this weekend should be pretty exciting.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and we lost twice to Notre Dame.
They were overtime losses. 3-on-3 hockey is not hockey.
All right, you're right. But we were ahead by 2 goals in both those games, I believe, and blew the lead. And Notre Dame's a good team. I think Michigan's a better team. So we'll see what happens at South Bend this weekend. But I'm blocking on my thought on hockey. So.
Well, while you find it, big game tonight for Michigan women's basketball. Mm-hmm. They are on the cusp, on the verge, winning the first Big Ten title in program history. If they win out, it's a done deal, right? If they lose, they'll need a little bit of help. Senior night tonight, Naz Hillman's last regular season game at the Chrysler Center. You talk about a legacy player in a rivalry game. I think that Michigan comes out and delivers a decisive blow to Michigan State tonight. I'm curious what you guys not only think of this game, but will this team go on to win the Big Ten championship? What do you make of their postseason prospects as well?
They played a little soft against Michigan State the last time they played them, if you remember that game. And I know Michigan was a little upset with themselves afterwards. State just made a whole bunch of shots in that game. But like, this game, like, the women are going to want this one more than any game I can think of in a long time. Because, like, they did not sit well with them the way they played against Michigan State last time. And then now you got everything on the table in front of you. But, I mean, winning out is hard. Like, this is not just an easy league anymore.
Yeah, but watching what they just did to Maryland, Craig, I mean, again, that's a Maryland team. It's one of the best teams in the country. They destroyed Maryland in College Park, but that was with Leah Brown. Leah Brown didn't play in this game the other night, and then they still won.
Yeah. Decisive. Well, you know, they're getting a lot from Layla Filia, if I'm saying her name right.
Filia.
And she's going to be one of the better players who's ever played at Michigan. Really obvious. Naz Hillman is of course the best player who ever played at Michigan. Leah Brown is a big deal. She, you know, having her out is important because she really is their second best scorer, and she's a tough player and physical. Michigan's issue to me is turnovers. This team is just careless with the ball. Over and over and over and over. I think in the Maryland game, they had something like 16 turnovers in the first half. And I know there's more turnovers in the women's game than the men's game, but still, they're often just kicking the ball out of bounds. So, I mean, if they can limit turnovers, I don't see any reason why this can't be a Final Four team even. Yeah. I think they could be a Final Four team if Brown is back, if they're healthy, if they can just be a little less careless with the ball. I think this is a potential Final Four team.
Yeah, 22 turnovers in the game to your point, 19 points off turnovers for Maryland in the contest. If there weren't for turnovers, they would have gotten destroyed again.
Right.
As it stands, they lost by 12 points, but it would have looked a lot like the game down in College Park if Michigan didn't turn the basketball over as much as they did. So I think they get this one. I'm with you. This is a squad that can, with Leah Brown back, and that to me is really the debate. If she can go, do you play her tonight, or do you just rest her one more game, let her play against Iowa to sort of get her feet wet for the Big Ten tournament, just to give her as much rest as you possibly can for what's going to be some continuous basketball here over the next couple of weeks? I don't know what the answer is going to be, but it seems like she's close. We know she's close to coming back because she's been looking better. Ira was talking about how good she's looking in warmups here over the last couple of times out. So she's close to coming back. See how it goes. Fellas, always a spirited discussion. Appreciate your time and perspective as always. Be sure to check the fellas out over on MGO Blog. Be sure to check us out on the next MGO Blog Roundtable next week. Of course, Ira and I will be back tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK and Dickens, voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.